topic of discussion is unconscious or implicit bias. So what is unconscious bias? We all have it. What can we do about it? So to answer all these questions and more is our guest who needs no introduction, Mithali Paul. That's my drum roll for you, girl. How have you been? It's been such a long time. I
think the last time we did something together was in December or something.
Oh, my God.
Maybe longer than that. So I don't remember. But thank you for having me back. And, excited to talk about this topic.
Yes.
When I suggested the topic, you were like, what is that?
Right? I wish I'd seen the expression on my face. I was like, I had no clue. I'm like, what is this? I need to look up and, look at the thing, a topic, and see what it's all about.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. And I'm really looking forward to this hour of discussion about
it. Sure, sure. I am too. And, the surprising thing is that we all experience it. We all even have it. And it's just, as we talk a little bit more and go through some examples today, you'll realize how common it is. We just, didn't have the terminology or the words for it, right?
Okay.
So when you think about stereotypes, that is something that people are more familiar with, right?
Mm-hmm.
You associate certain traits or certain characteristics with a group of people,
mm-hmm.
could be based on race, could be based on ethnicity, could be based on gender. We just make certain assumptions, and those are stereotypes, right? So a lot of times the stereotypes, what we're making, are kind of conscious, we're aware of those stereotypes. So that's called cognitive bias. So cognitive mm-hmm. bias is when we realize that we're doing it,
okay.
and we're okay with it. It's not, for good or for bad, but we realize we're doing it and we're okay with it. But a lot of times we have biases that are unconscious or implicit. So mm-hmm. you're making an assumption or you're making an association with a certain individual based on previous experiences. So as you all know, obviously our brains are wired in, different ways. But then there was actually a piece of research I was looking at. Apparently every second, our brains are exposed to 4 million pieces of information.
Oh. Wow.
That's just, constantly. So it's conscious, it's subconscious, because I'm looking at you or I'm looking at you, but my brain's processing just everything in this environment, right?
Yeah.
Along with everything that's happened this morning, the traffic that I dealt with when I walked into the building, or the conversations that I've had. So consciously or subconsciously, a brain has immense amount of information mm-hmm. that we're dealing with at any given point of time. So we develop, and again, we're not consciously doing this, but our brains are creating shortcuts to go through this information in the quickest and most efficient way possible. And the only way to do it is to find similarities or commonalities between different pieces of information and connect it. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so those are called shortcuts, right? So we're creating these neural pathways in our brain based on our previous experiences, based on the information that we're exposed to, based on all of our conscious and unconscious biases. And based on those, we're constantly making decisions. You've heard people say it was a gut feeling, right?
Yeah.
That gut feeling is really you going by your impulse. And the impulse is a result of pretty much, all the biases that you have, all the information that you have in mm-hmm. your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of imagine how important it then becomes to think about what exactly is unconscious bias. What are the biases that I individually have, and how does it impact how I think, how I look at people, how I interact with people, how I make decisions that are impacting other people based on my biases, which I may not be aware I have. that's how important it becomes to start thinking about, you know, unconscious bias.
Wow.
That's pretty
deep. Yeah, it's pretty deep, right?
It is.
So, you know, unconscious bias or implicit bias, if you have to look at the definition of it, it refers to unconscious forms of discrimination and stereotyping based on race, gender, sexuality, ethnicity, ability, age, and so on.
Hmm.
It differs from the cognitive bias, which is more predictable. Hmm. It's based on, you know, mental errors that you may make as a result of misunderstanding a certain situation or a certain reality. And you're making decisions based on that. That's cognitive bias because you know and you're making a decision based on that. Hmm. You know, like I'm going to assume that as a woman, you are not going to be handy around the house or you don't know how to fix a car. Like, that's a cognitive bias I have based on the information or the assumptions or what have you. So if you were to tell me that, you know, you ride a motorcycle or you know how to fix cars, I'll be like, Lynn, you know, and that would be a surprise.
Right.
That would be a surprise for me because cognitively my bias is you're a woman, so you can't fix a car, or you probably don't ride a motorcycle. That's a cognitive bias. I know about it. I'm aware about it. But I'm still making decisions based on that.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had a car problem, I wouldn't come to you. Maybe I'll go to your husband.
Yeah.
Based on that cognitive bias that she's a woman, she won't be able to help me. Let me talk to a man about it. Right?
Yeah.
So that's a very oversimplified cognitive bias that you may have. But an implicit bias is where I don't even realize that I'm making some assumptions about you and making decisions based on assumptions, you know, hiring decisions at work or, you know, even people you hang out with or who you associate yourself with. There's a lot of bias that goes into it that we may not even realize. And it could be an experience, a negative or a positive experience that you had 20 years ago. But then your brain has it in its subconscious, right? That's why it's called implicit bias or subconscious bias. Maybe you had a negative experience with someone from a particular, you know, and I'll give you an example. When I first came to the U.S., my very first interview, so I came here to go to grad school, right? And my very first interview with the program director at the university office, I landed the previous day, like the first day, the next morning, I had my appointment with the program director, and it was kind of like the formal interview. And, you know, I'm here bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, just moved here to the U.S. Everyone's been wonderful to me in the airport. And I'm like, wow, Houston's such a friendly town. Everyone's been wonderful. And I end up in the program director's office, and he starts talking to me about the importance of integrity in the U.S. culture and how some cultures don't give as much importance to integrity. And I'm sitting there going, like, did I miss a memo of some sort? Like, what's happening here, right?
Yeah.
Why am I being lectured about integrity?
Yeah.
The first time that someone meets me, like, what did I do or say that he thinks it's important for me to know about the importance of integrity? I'm like, why are you questioning my integrity, right? And I'm thinking about that. And then, you know, we continued the rest of the discussion. And all the warm and fuzzy feeling that I had going into his office was gone when I left because I just couldn't understand where that was coming from.
Right.
And so then, you know, at a much later time when I spoke about it, you know, it kind of left me a bad feeling in my mouth. And I was like, maybe I made a wrong decision, you know, in choosing this program. Maybe I almost thought I was going to transfer out and look at other programs because it really, really impacted how I felt, right? And then later on, I learned that the program director had actually had a negative experience with some international students previously who were from India.
Yeah.
and they had misused, you know, he'd given them the opportunity to be a teaching assistant. They had misused some of the university resources and, you know, were photocopying material, which was, you know, obviously not appropriate. And so in his mind, he had just made up his mind that every student from India has no integrity and is going to take advantage of the system.
Yeah.
And I had no idea about this, right? So I'm coming in wondering, like, where's this coming from? What did I do to deserve this?
Yeah.
And for him, it was just because he had made that association in his mind.
Yeah.
He just assumed that everyone was going to be that way. Yeah. And so he wanted to, you know, set those expectations right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And so it took me several months to actually, you know, let go of that feeling. Yeah. And at least when I understood where he came from, you know, I could understand why he said what he did. Did I forgive him? It took me a longer time to forgive him because I was like, you should know better. You're an academician, right? Yeah. But anyway, so that's kind of an example where, and he may not even have realized he was doing that,
right?
You know, because in his mind, that bias was there. It was formed by his personal experience. And he just jumped to that assumption and, you know, made that stereotypical assessment and kind of, you know, went on from there.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about implicit bias, you think about what causes it, right? So we just heard about, you know, talked about a couple of examples, and it could be sometimes it's because of personal experiences that you've had. Even maybe 10, 15 years ago, you had an experience and it stays within your mind and you just make that association. So there's, you know, we, as I mentioned in the beginning, we, you know, our brains try to seek a pattern. And at the back of our mind, you know, our minds are always working. Even when you're sleeping in REM, they're still, that's how we have dreams, because our brains are constantly working, right?
Yeah.
They're working on different memories. So we're always seeking patterns, or our brains are always seeking patterns to make different associations, right? And then we try to create shortcuts and make, you know, things easier to make those decisions. And then there's also social conditioning, right? It may not be something that you experienced, something you heard from your parents, something you heard from your friends, something that you hear from the media, right? You just make those assumptions, or there's that social conditioning where you're constantly hearing it from other people.
Yeah.
And so at the back of your mind, you associate that, you know? And it's difficult to talk about these things, but when you think about it, you know, all the violence against Black Americans, right?
Yeah.
When you think about all the racial unrest, and a lot of it is got to do with implicit bias and unconscious bias. And, you know, you can go through a lot of diversity training. But that only helps you if you already know what your biases are, right?
Yeah.
If you don't even know what your biases are and how they're impacting your actions every day, then you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So really the first step is that awareness. And that awareness is very hard to come about because either someone has to point it out to you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're constantly exposing yourself to different people, different viewpoints. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, it's like we have this whole, you know, Fox versus CNN, or, you know, like you have different camps, right?
Yes.
You always have different camps.
Yeah.
And you only want to listen to things that validate what your beliefs are.
So true.
And that just continues to strengthen your biases, right? Yeah. Because you're constantly taking in information, and that's actually a type of bias. It's called, you know, confirmation bias. Is that I already believe something about you.
Yeah.
You know, I've made up my mind. So now I'm going to look for pieces of information that validates that bias, right? And then it just gives me more opportunity to believe in it more strongly and say, oh, yeah, that's why. You know, look.
Yes.
Like, there may be one thing that happens, and you just say that, see?
Yeah.
That's one incident that validates what I just said, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so it just makes it worse.
Yeah.
Right?
Just like friend circle, right? Mm-hmm. Like even you choose, sometimes you choose friends that are, like have similar thoughts or, you know, and we say, oh, we you know, like we gravitate towards those people, or we, mm-hmm. you know, because we have things that we both have the same common. Thoughts and yeah. common, right? But yeah. sometimes, and then we don't like someone who's different and challenges us.
Yes, yeah,
absolutely. Like, don't, who doesn't agree, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. yeah because yeah. then it becomes a like a discussion, or yeah, yeah, yeah. They're defiant, right? Yeah. So yeah.
exactly. Yeah. And true. You know, when you think about it, like especially in the past couple of years, it's things have been so politically charged that we know that it's kind of touchy. Mm-hmm. topic, so we're yes. not going to talk about it, right? Yes. Because the likelihood that you and I may not see eye to eye is high. Mm-hmm. And then what happens? How does that impact our relationship? So, you know, maybe I'm not going to bring that up with Lynn because she may not agree, and that may impact how we feel about each other, right?
Right.
And so a lot of times, like you said, we just try to surround ourselves with people that we know agree yeah. with us or right. have a similar viewpoint, because it's uncomfortable to have a conversation. And I mean, you know, I have a tough time too. Like if we have to sit down and have a discussion about something, it's hard to see the other person's viewpoint. And having a healthy debate where you respect the other person's viewpoint and not try to put the other person down. I mean, even our politicians don't really.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Everyone struggles yeah. with it, right?
Yeah.
And that's because of all of these conscious and unconscious biases that we have, which are constantly making us, you know, do certain things in the way.
So is it harder in the work environment, you think, compared to?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because, you know, in the workplace, you're impacting people's livelihood, yeah. right? If you have biases and you're a hiring manager, right? A lot of times I may make assumptions looking at someone's resume, looking at their name, right?
Yeah.
If it's a name that you're not familiar with, or if you've already associated certain traits with a certain culture, again, maybe I, you know, we just assume Asians are really good at numbers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Or they're very brainy. Right?
Yeah.
And maybe this particular, and maybe you have two resumes that you're looking at and two employees that you're considering for a promotion, right? And maybe one person's white and one person's Asian, and it's a financial position. The likelihood of you making an assumption and making a decision, and you may not even realize it.
Yeah.
Because you're interviewing both, but you're looking for confirmation and validation because you're already assuming the Asian is smarter in numbers than the white person, right? Yeah. And you may end up giving the job to that person because of that bias and not strictly based on qualifications. And so to avoid a situation like that, that's why you have to have, one, that awareness of, I may be making a decision on gut feeling and not on facts, right? So always, like, so a situation like this, you would want to compare both the candidates based on exactly the, you know, the competencies required for the job, and then looking for accomplishments or examples of that individual having demonstrated those competencies on the job and not on, you know, what you think the person's capable of.
Yeah.
The same thing. Like, you'll see, there are people that can talk themselves out of any situation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there are others that are not so extroverted.
Yeah.
And when they get into trouble, they can't really talk themselves. You'll see that with your kids, right? You know, there'll be some that'll talk their way out of anything because they're just good at doing that. And, you know, and then there would be someone else that can't, and because you already have that bias, you know, towards someone. And there's actually a term for it. You have the halo and the horn effect. That's actually a bias, a type of bias as well, where the halo effect is you just think that person's wonderful, right? Maybe it's your favorite child. Maybe it's your favorite, you know, somebody, your best friend or what have you, right? You put a halo around them because you're like, Lynn can never do anything wrong. Like, Lynn's wonderful. She can never do anything wrong. So if Lynn makes a mistake, I'm going to overlook it, right? but Layla, maybe I don't really like you that much, right?
Yeah.
That one time that Layla was rude to me, like, she really doesn't know how to talk to me. Yeah. So I put horns on Layla, right?
Yeah.
So the horn effect is, even if you make the same mistake, the repercussions of that is going to be much worse because I don't like Layla, because Layla's got horns and you got a halo. So think about how that pans out in a workplace, right?
Yeah.
Because there's always that, you know, you'll have that favoritism, or it'll be inconsistencies in how you treat your employees and how you lead and how you recruit and how you manage who you give that raise to.
Yeah.
You know, so think about how every day it can actually impact other people's lives if you are in a leadership or a management position.
Yeah, that's important. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't even realize that, right? Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to hiring, I don't know how it works now, but, you know, before we used to always just call people, do the interview, because you have, you know, it's personal, right? Face to face. But many times it's now send your resume. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes when you read the resume, it's so perfect. And when you read the name, it's perfect too. So, on what, like, how are people hired now in that, in this case? Like, is it still, you still do interviews, or are you just?
Of course.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, because we're getting more and more aware of, you know, all these biases that creep in into recruitment, and because diversity is important.
Right.
And, you know, everyone realizes, not just in healthcare, every industry, we realize that the more diverse a workforce we have, the better, the more effective we're going to be, the more inclusive of an environment our employees are going to have. They're going to be happier. They're going to be engaged. You're going to retain them, you know. So, so there's, you know, bias is just one of the factors, but, you know, there's so many other diversity related factors that employers now take into account. Obviously, you still have, most organizations have the online tools, right?
Yes.
Where you submit your application, they're looking for, it's kind of AI, computer generated. Some employers will have bots. If you go onto the Houston Methodist career site, if you start chatting with someone, you'll realize it's actually a recruitment bot and not a person you're chatting with. But, you know, there's a lot of artificial intelligence and AI that looks for keywords, right, based on the job description and the role. And they're looking for those keywords in your resume. So the resume is always still going to be the first, point of contact or what have you. After that, once you've met the minimum job requirements, right, based on that resume review from the system, that's when you get into the next level, and that's where the recruiters get involved, and then the managers get involved, and then you get into, you know, whether it's video interviewing or in-person interviewing and things like that. But to kind of answer your question, how do you address and keep recruitment consistent is by using standardized tools, right? Instead of doing, even when you're doing behavioral interviews, we have tools that we use to make sure that we're making decisions based on facts and not on biases.
Okay.
All right, so let's go on a short break, and when we return, we will continue our conversation with Mitali Paul. Topic of discussion is implicit bias. This is Chai Time on 99.5 FM. Welcome back to Chai Time on 99.5 FM. We are in conversation with Mitali Paul, and you know, this discussion has been very interesting.
Yeah, it's eye-opening.
Eye-opening as well, yeah. So let's continue with it. So we are talking about implicit bias.
Sure. So let's talk about, we already covered a couple, but let's talk about the different types of biases or how they end up showing up, right? So you have something called affinity bias, and we kind of talked a little bit about that. Affinity is when you like something or someone, right?
Yeah.
So if you find something that similar with someone, then you tend to have the affinity bias. Mm-hmm. And this, again, may show up like friends that you hang out with, but that's not as, dangerous or doesn't have repercussions versus, if I'm a manager and I'm just trying to recruit people to my team that remind me of me,
yeah,
that have similar, you know, qualities or characteristics like me, mm-hmm. and I'm making recruitment decisions based on that, yeah. you know, I'm a great employee, so I may end up actually ending up with great employees. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to be making decisions based on who's the best for the job, but it's going to be based on who I like or who I think fits. And then the risk of that is you end up having a team that is very similar, mm-hmm. right, yeah. in characteristics and skills, and it's not a diverse team.
Yeah.
And then I end up with a yes team, right? Because yeah. everyone's like me, everyone, you know, and we may not make the best decisions for the organization. So you have the affinity bias. We tend to gravitate towards people that are similar to us. Right? Then you have ageism, which is, we know, discrimination based on age, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a tech job, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't even look at resumes above 50
yeah.
or 60 because you're just assuming that, oh, that person's too old.
Yeah.
You know, it's an IT job or a tech job. We need someone younger.
Yeah.
Well, you could find someone younger, but they may not have the best skill set. Just because they're younger doesn't mean they're better at something, or just because they're older doesn't mean they're not good at something. Mm. And you see a whole lot of ageism.
Yeah, and speaking about that, it just you know, occurred to me that a friend of mine, a school friend of mine, she, I don't know, like she's based in London, and recently she posted on social media that she got a job as a flight attendant. For British Airways.
That's amazing. That's
right? Yeah, because when we were young, like I remember my cousin who wanted to be a flight attendant. She had to be a certain age. She had to walk. She had a certain height.
Yeah.
All of those things. And you couldn't be, you know, if you're past whatever certain age.
You had to retire. You had to retire in your 30s or 40s.
Right. So I was like, you go, girl. I mean, because she's like, okay, my kids are grown up now. And, you know, I have always been there for my family. And now I want to do something for myself. And being, and she wants to travel, but at the same time work and things like that, right? But I'm like, wow, that's really good. So things are changing then, right? Now that you're talking about ageism.
Yeah, you would not see that happen maybe even 10 years ago.
Mm-mm. Yes.
No. Right?
Yeah, that's great.
Then you have the attribution bias, right? Attribution bias is you're looking at people's attributes or you're looking at people's characteristics and thinking, you know, the example that I gave you about fixing cars, right?
Yeah.
The assumption is that women may be less competent than men. They may undervalue their accomplishments or overvalue their mistakes because you're a woman versus a man. Mm. That's called attribution bias. It also kind of ends up being, you know, the gender bias thing also comes into play there. But an attribute could be, doesn't have to be gender related. It could be certain race. You know, we make an assumption that they have certain attributes.
Right.
Even within India, like, you know, when you think about it, people hear I'm Bengali and my husband's Malayali and they're like, oh, your kids must be really smart because both Bengalis and Malayalis are supposed to be very smart.
Yeah. I mean, smart genes.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, think about my poor kids. Yeah, I mean, you know, if they weren't the smart, they would live their entire life thinking like, why am I not smart? Because I have apparently two very smart parents, right? And again, we're making those assumptions based on, you know, those stereotypes and those things. Like, you know, when you look at maybe the Gujarati or the Marwari community, you assume or you make assumptions that they're more entrepreneurial and really good at business. Yeah. So you may have someone that belongs to that community and is not interested in business, right? When I wanted to get into business, like my entire family was like, why?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it was only lawyers or doctors, right? Yeah. And so when I talked about healthcare administration, they're like, what is that? And why would you even want to do that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So all of these biases that creep into, you know, people's decision making.
Yeah. Like we opened, when we opened Arlings, we never had servers or any of our staff, front of the house staff, we didn't have any Indians. And it's Indo-Chinese, right?
Yeah.
So when customers would come in, they're like, why don't you hire Indian servers? Because they know our language. They know your food.
So it's the assumption again that these people don't know anything about your food.
Yeah.
But they don't, you know, not realizing. I mean, you can train them.
Exactly.
You can get them to taste the food and get them to know our culture as well. So they're learning at the same time while they're working. So we had that, people asking us, like, you know, they don't understand our culture. They don't understand your food. If we ask them for something, if we ask, you know, what is the Hakka noodles? Or, you know, they don't even know how to explain it. I said, no, we train them. It's not necessary just because they are not Indians doesn't mean they don't have that knowledge, because we give them that knowledge of food.
Exactly. That's a great example. And then you have the beauty bias, you know, judging people, especially women, by based on how attractive you think they are. And, you know, it's actually, there is research on this, that even in the workplace, you know, people that are attractive, it could be charisma, it could be, you know, physical attributes or look, they get away with stuff because they're just likable based on their attractiveness than someone who may not be perceived as that attractive. And you just have that unconscious bias based on that. And again, you don't even realize, like, you know, that because that person is either attractive or unattractive, we're making judgments about that person based on that appearance.
Yeah.
And it's very, very, very real.
But then movies do that. I mean, in the movies, right?
So, and then the media, like, right?
The media, all
the media
time.
Has, like, I mean, you know, across every, whether it's movies or whether you're watching ads or things like that, we're constantly flooded with images of what beauty means, right?
Yes.
And then again, that's why, you know, a lot of it is social conditioning. It's not, you're a bad person. If you have biases, it doesn't make you a bad person or an evil person.
Correct.
It's all the, you know, all the information that's coming at you that you're constantly, you know, creating all these biases at the back of your mind.
Right.
And that's, again, where it's important to have these conversations and for people to understand this and say, like, you know, how do we redefine beauty? And we've been seeing some of that in ads now. And that's really nice to see, like, you know, beauty doesn't just mean white skin. It could be dark skin.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't have to be that you have, what was that cliche, 36, 24, 36.
They're showing different body types.
The Barbie doll body, that's not just your definition of beauty, that, you know, you could have scars, you could have, you know, things like that. Then you have the confirmation bias. We talked about this, where you already have a tendency, you favor certain information and then you're just holding on to that and you're always looking for things to validate, to say, see, I told you so. You know, I know that this person is like this or that based on this bias that I have, but I'm always looking for information to confirm that. Then you have conformity bias, where you have common group settings where people are influenced by others. It's kind of like the group think, right? Yeah. So maybe you have a very strong voice in your friend circle, right? And your biases then start influencing other people in your friend circle. And they may not realize it, but, you know, you're, because they're hearing it from you, they're seeing how you interact with people based on that bias, how you act on that bias. And then everybody else starts doing that without realizing it, you know, and that's the conformity bias. And then you have a couple others, the gender bias we talked about, the halo and horns effect, we talked about that, the contrast effect. The contrast is kind of, conformity is where you have things in, that are similar, right?
Yeah.
The contrast effect is when you are comparing one person to the other. So think about it. Maybe you have two kids and you're comparing the two kids, right?
Yeah.
So you have that contrast effect, or you're biased because one child is good at something. You just assume that the other child should be good at them at that as well. Or you're constantly comparing them about things, not realizing that they're two different individuals. Yeah. They could be in the same environment. Yes, they came from you, you know, but again, they're two different individuals with different skill sets. And just because, you know, they're your children doesn't mean they have to be a certain way. So that contrast bias also comes in. And then you have the weight bias. We talked about that a little bit offline, judging a person negatively because they're larger or heavier. Sometimes you associate that with being lazy or what have you. And then the name bias. The name bias particularly comes into effect when you're looking at resumes because technically, you know, when you look at stats, again, people spend maybe less than 10 seconds looking at a resume. And you're looking for information on the resume, yes. right? And you're looking for, you know, either skills or things like that. You're looking for things consciously, but subconsciously, you may look at a name and maybe you had an awful experience with a Mitali in the past. The moment you see that name again, you may not realize, but you already got this implicit bias because you're like, I'm never going to hire Mitali again because she was just awful or had a horrible experience. So now anytime I encounter someone with that same name, It's that Karen effect or that Mitali effect that's going to come in, right? So, I mean, it's real, you know? It's like things like this actually happen and we don't even realize it. And so implicit bias actually ends up leading to discrimination. So there was a really nice graphic that I saw when I was doing a little bit more research. You know, we start off with, so the imagery was, how does unconscious bias lead to discrimination, right? So you start off with a stereotype, you make some assumptions, then that stereotype leads to unconscious bias. You have a stereotype in your mind, and that leads to unconscious bias. You're not even realizing that it's there. Then you start prejudging people based on that bias. So now that thought is turning into action because you are prejudging people based on that bias, and then you're acting on that, right? You're behaving a certain way. Either you're including them because you like them or you're excluding them because you don't like them. So that's when it turns into behavior. So now it's not in your mind anymore. It's out there. You're behaving based on your unconscious biases, you're behaving a certain way. And that's when it becomes an action, and that's when it becomes discrimination because, again, whether it's positive or negative, it's discrimination because it's not based on facts. It's not based on actual measurable metrics. It's based on thoughts.
Your thoughts.
Stereotypes. Biases, right? And that's, again, why is unconscious bias important to learn about? Because it turns into actions and behaviors, which leads to discrimination.
Like in terms of, I'm going back to, again, when we first opened the restaurant, when we had to hire staff. So our mindset was only hire experienced staff, people who have the experience of serving, hosting, you know, in the kitchen also, they have to have the skills. And skills meaning they have to be really good. Not only just chopping, and they have to learn, have really good skills in the kitchen. And it was a revolving door because people kept coming and we kept, you know, they were walking out. And it was frustrating because we kept hiring, training, and then letting go, or they just walk out. And then I guess, you know, as the years went by, we kind of realized that people can be trained. Not necessarily they have to have the experience, you know, whether it's a server. We have trained so many staff who started off as a busser, just cleaning tables. Then we moved them to food runners, learning the food, carrying trays, training them to carry trays, and then going to serving. Or if they want to be a bartender. So same thing with hosting too, teaching them. And now we are at a point where when, now we don't hire many because many have, they stay with us. But even if we have to, like if they go back, they're going, they have their own professional jobs and they're going back and we are hiring, we see the potential in that person now. And we are like, okay, this person can be trained no matter what, you know, if they have, they show that they want to learn and they want to work hard and they want to do more than what they have been hired for, this person can do it. So we have evolved as well when it comes to hiring.
And that's why they say, you know, hire for attitude and not for aptitude, just aptitude, right? Because, you know, now, of course, there are exceptions, right? If you need a nurse, or yes, if you need a radiation, you know, technologist, or if you need a pharmacist, you have to have those credentials and you have to have those skills.
Yes.
So skills for those jobs are important.
Yeah. Correct.
But even when you have two individuals that have the same skills and the competencies, always hire for the attitude. Because you can always train up.
Yes.
But you cannot change someone's attitude.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
And if they have that potential, if they had that, have that desire to learn and improve, and they are the right fit for your culture, you're going to have someone who's committed, who's dedicated, who you can retain, who's not going to be toxic in the workplace for other people, right? Yeah. And so that's why they always say, you know, you can train up on the skills piece of it, just like the example you gave. I mean, you know, but you can't change someone's attitude.
Yeah.
And that, that's something, it takes a lot much more to change behavior than to change someone's skill set.
And I'm so fortunate because even for me personally, when I was looking for a job, I was studying and looking for a job. I started off as a server and then I went into pharmacy, but a merchandiser. So I was doing merchandising, putting stuff on the shelves and had my own aisle to take care of. And then, you know, the manager said, you want to be a cashier? We can do, you know, cashier and merchandising. So I did both. And then the owner was like, why don't you try and work in the pharmacy? And then I became a technician and then I went to study and, you know, everything. So it everything just step by step.
Exactly.
I guess they saw that I had that potential, the potential, and they gave me that chance. So that's the thing. You have to be given that chance too. You may have that potential, but if no one sees it and you're not given that chance, I was given that chance and I'm so, you know, I'm really thankful for that because he saw that. He's like, you can do more. You don't have to just be a cashier, but you go and you be, you know, train under the pharmacist and learn. So I was learning everything hands-on, not having that background of the education, but then later on going and getting my certificate, like being certified and everything else.
And that's where, you know, you have to remove the systemic barriers that exist in some organizations because, you may have a job description that says required 5 years of experience or required 2 years of experience. What happens if you don't have that? Then you never get the opportunity because the requirements are so stringent. And that's something that, you know, even at Houston Methodist, it's evolving. We're looking at that when we're saying, how can we make it more competency-based and how can we make it more inclusive and not so stringent where already in a tight job market, you're trying to develop a diverse workforce, you're trying to be inclusive, you're trying to remove biases, but then in a way you have an experience bias, bias because you're assuming that just because you've done this job before, you're going to be good at it. Maybe you've done this job before, but now you're so burnt out with that job, you're not good at it anymore. You do it for a paycheck versus someone that's just learning and is starting off. They're probably going to be a much better hire than someone who's done the job and they're like, oh my God, you know, like I just have to do this because I need a paycheck, right? I mean, so there's obviously, you know, a lot of evolution as employers in the workplace that we have to do. But as individuals, how can we continue to make an impact, right? Both at work and in our personal lives.
Yes.
So I know we're probably...
We still have time.
Yeah, we've got a few more minutes. But, you know, we've talked so much about unconscious bias and obviously we want to talk about what can we do about it, right? How do we address it now that we know it exists, now that, you know that we may have our own biases? What do we do about it, right?
Right.
So the American Academy of Family Physicians actually came up with these 8 tactics. And if you know me, I love a play of words. I love acronyms. So the acronym is actually called IMPLICIT. So it's a good way to remember these tactics. It's called IMPLICIT. So the I stands for introspection.
Okay.
So how do we deal with implicit bias? You start off with the I, introspection. It's self-reflection.
Yes.
What is it that influences my decision-making? What are things? So it takes that self-awareness. Explore and identify your own prejudices by taking an implicit association test. or through other means of self-analysis. So there's actually online tests for free that you can take. I think it's called IAT or something, implicit analysis test or something like that. And there's actually a website called Project Implicit, and it was, you know, kind of funded, and it was a study. So you can actually take a test and find out what are the subconscious biases that you have. So that's your first step, introspection. Then the M stands for mindfulness. Since you're more likely to give in to your biases when you're under pressure, practice ways to reduce stress and increase mindfulness, such as focused breathing. So we all know when we're multitasking, we're going to go back to that gut instinct and make decisions based on gut instinct. But if you're mindful in the moment and you know that you could be giving in to some bias when you're making an important decision, be more mindful as you're making those decisions so you know that no bias creeps in.
Yeah.
Then P stands for perspective taking. Consider experiences from the point of view of the person being stereotyped. You can do this by reading or watching content that discusses those experiences or directly interacting with people from those groups. So if you already know you've made a certain association with a certain group, expose yourself more to them so that it helps you break those biases, right? Because you made certain assumptions, positive or negative. And if you expose yourself to more people in that stereotypical group, you learn that either your biases are wrong or, you know, you're going to find exceptions and it's going to make you again register in your brain that not everybody is like that, right?
Correct.
L is for learn to slow down. Before interacting with people from certain groups, pause and reflect to reduce reflexive actions. Consider positive examples of people from that stereotype group, such as public figures or personal friends. And then, you know, you slow down and make decisions based on that. The I stands for individuation. Evaluate people based on their personal characteristics, them as an individual rather than an affiliated group, right? This could include connecting over shared interests and finding mutual things. So you're judging people by who they are and not what you think they represent or they're associated with. Then C is for check your messaging. As opposed to saying things like, we don't see color, use statements that welcome and embrace multiculturalism or other differences. So don't just say, right? Do.
Do.
Make sure that your message resonates in your actions and not your words, right? And that's how you're going to overcome that bias. Then I stands for institutionalize fairness. Support a culture of diversity and inclusion at the organizational level. And identify your group's blind spots. And then make sure you're reviewing images in your office to see if they further or undercut stereotypes. So not just yourself as a leader or as, you know, a business owner, you look at your culture within your workplace to see what are some stereotypes we have? What are some biases we have as a group? And how do we break those?
Yes.
Right? Take two. T is for take two. Resisting implicit bias is lifelong work. You have to constantly restart the process and look for new ways to improve. Because again, as we're living our lives, more biases are creeping in, right? So think about it. You know, I've got 40-something years of bias that I got to work on.
Yeah.
But I may live another 40 years. And so, you know, I'm going to constantly work on it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, a couple of things that I wanted to mention in terms of facts just to make the impact and leave on an impactful note is, you know, again, why do we need to understand and care about implicit bias? There's so much of evidence that unconscious bias seeps into decisions that affect people's lives, right? Black Americans suffer from police harassment and violence at a much higher rate than white people. They attribute police harassment to the internal characteristics of Black people, implying that it's deserved and not to the external context. Then maternal mortality is much higher in African American women because we, as healthcare providers, there's a lot of data and research out there that we minimize their, you know, complaints or concerns or issues almost to the extent where it impacts their life expectancy. White job applicants were found to be 74% more likely to have success than applicants from ethnic minorities with identical CVs.
Oh, wow.
Okay, 74% more. University professors were found to be far more likely to respond to emails from students with white-sounding names.
Oh.
Okay. U.S. doctors have been found to recommend less pain medications for Black or Latino patients. And this is all, like, validated data, right? Than white patients with the same injury. White participants in a study were found to perceive Black faces as more threatening than white faces with the same expression. And that you have that beauty bias, right? Because we associate the color of skin with beauty.
Yes.
And it's the same expression on two people's faces, but one is white and one is Black.
Yeah.
And you tend to misinterpret one person's expression against the others. Yeah. So these are just a couple of facts that are out there where you see how implicit bias plays out in society, in anyone's lives. And that's why it's important to have this dialogue and the awareness.
And I'm so glad we did this morning. We, you know, this hour was really an eye-opener. And it was, I'm so happy that you decided to bring up this topic and talk about it, because this, we don't realize it unless we have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Mitali.
Yeah.